All right, everybody, welcome back to the Crypto Rundown. Bitcoin is starting to decouple from the tech stocks. We tracked the IGV Bitcoin trade on the way down. It is changing on the way back up, and it could be a big deal because most people are still treating Bitcoin like just another risk asset. The data is starting to tell a different story as Wall Street has been buying Bitcoin for 13 straight days through the ETF, which is one of the strongest streaks we've seen in months. And at the same time, the odds of Bitcoin hitting 90K now have jumped to 62%. We covered that. Everybody was on the same side of the boat. It's starting to change. You are in the right place because the question to ask is, are we watching the early stages of major breakout, or is this just a bull trap and we could be heading lower? You're in the right place. We're going to break down all the data around those stories and much more. I have my friend Brian with us today on this lovely Thursday. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Hey, man, happy to be here. I'm pushing back. No bull trap here. I don't want to hear that. I just feel like it's up only.
Yeah, no, we gotta pose the question, right? Because that's what we do here is we pose questions, we bring thesis, and we break it down with our findings. And I think we've really been correct. I feel like if you've been here over the last 6 to 8 weeks, especially through this, you know, quote unquote war time, the Crypto 101 podcast has gotten it right. I think we've covered a lot of the negativity the right way. We gave a different view. And I'm really proud of one of my quotes. You were on with me and I was like, hey, listen, I think the pain trade's higher. And you were bullish. You were feeling bullish. The quote was, I just felt the pain trade was to the upside. It was too many bears. So the macro outlook is the same. We're still in this weird holding pattern. What's going on with Iran? The market does not care. Let's just put it flat out. Call it what it is. Is the future of the world AI, tech, chips, semis, crypto, finance? Is it happening in the Strait of Hormuz? No, it is not. It is a fear tactic. And yes, there's oil there. Yes, it could cause inflation. The market is looking through it. And so if that pops its ugly pimple head, we will go back and cover it. But for now, we jump right into the fun stuff. Let's pull up CoinMarketCap and just take a look at the numbers before we dive into these awesome stats around crypto and how Wall Street has been buying for 13 straight days. Brian, anything sticking out to you on CoinMarketCap?
Yeah, man. It's over the past week, we see a lot more green than we do red. And that's been pretty consistent recently. And I'm just happy we can finally jump into CoinMarketCap and talk about prices going up instead of trying to break down geopolitical news and what happened to the most recent oil tanker at the Strait of Hormuz. So take us back to our comfort zone. Bitcoin, I mean, dude, we hit like $80,000 yesterday. I know there's been a little bit of a yo-yo and back and forth, but we're touching 80,000. It feels like it was just a couple weeks ago when we were in that 60 range and we were just kind of looking at the paint dry, looking at each other, and we're like, there's a lot of weird things going on in the market, and it didn't make a lot of sense to us. And that's why we were consistently saying that it felt like there was a local bottom there, and we always kind of disclose black swan events and something could happen, but it's certainly kind of trending the way we expected. I mean, up and to the right, baby. That's the type of chart we want. I was talking to Joe yesterday, and I was like, man, he's like, we're back. It's 80,000. We're back at 80,000. And I was like, man, it just feels good.
Yeah, that it does. That it does. And It was one of those weekends. If you follow the Crypto 101 podcast on X, you'll know that a sneaky bullish signal is when TiVo tweets out one of his famous bagels, one of his famous crypto bagels on a Sunday. And there was a couple juicy bagels. And I threw one out on the timeline this weekend because I was just like, man, I feel it. And then you get that pop in Bitcoin this week. And now you're here on Thursday and you're getting a double Mona Lisa smile with the Satoshi Bitcoin t-shirt. The light's been on in the back, Brian. It hasn't been off. And I say that because the thesis that we wrote on the way down and we tied together, and it was one of the first, I thought we were one of the first programs to pick this up, was the IGV Bitcoin trade. And we wrote it on the way down. It was Quantum's going to take over Bitcoin. It was AI is going to put software companies out of business. And so it felt like when we put the IGV and we put Bitcoin together, it was basically the same chart. And so we seem to have bottomed. I have here up on the screen here, the 1 month. And so if you throw up the IGV on the 1 month, you can see that it was very similar, kind of like a double bottom. And then we rode the way up. And what I'm seeing this week is the start of a decoupling here. So if you look in the last day, awful earnings for the IGV sector this week. Not the whole sector. There's winners and losers. It's a stock picker's market over there. But what I really love to see is how when you see that the IGV had its run up and now it's selling back off again, maybe going back to retest those lows, Bitcoin is strong. Bitcoin is strong on the week. It's strong, well, 1.5% in the last 24 hours. But the other day, we had that big pop. And I really like seeing us hold the weekly strength here compared to that software trade, because it felt like that was kind of an asymmetric move to the downside in lockstep. 1, 2, 3, moving downwards together. So I love to see the price action, because then I ask the question why, and then what we're moving on to the next topic is I can give you about 13 reasons why. And it's every day Wall Street continues to go and buy Bitcoin. Eric from Bloomberg saying here that the Bitcoin ETF flows are keep going back into the high life. Every single rolling period for what Bloomberg tracks is now positive. Haven't seen that in months. People are buying the Bitcoin ETFs. As Brian, or as I noted at the top of the show, but Brian sent this over, we got 62% that Bitcoin's going to hit 90K this year. That's completely flipped from when it was, I believe it was like 40, 50K was the majority. Now the majority thinks that we're going higher. As I said, the pain trades to the upside. So what do you think of all that, Brian, as we set the table here for the Bitcoin conversation?
Yeah, I mean, what a breakdown, Tebow. I think you nailed it with the IGV and Bitcoin decoupling. That's an important shift, because much of the cycle, Bitcoin's traded like a high beta tech asset, especially against those software stocks. But now we're starting to see Bitcoin pull away from the IGV, which probably suggests it's going to be trading more on its own crypto-specific narrative again. And hopefully we continue to see absolutely great breakouts. We got these Bitcoin ETF flows. They're strong. They're one of the cleanest signs that real money demand for Bitcoin's still there. Spot ETF inflows have continued to come even during the chop, which, what's that tell us, Tebow? That institutions are using this weakness and uncertainty as accumulation windows rather than reasons to step away. We've been preaching that every week. Smart money, follow the smart money. And I get it. There's volatility and there's pullbacks. Oh, I should have bought at 69, 68 instead of 72 or 77. At the end of the day, I think a lot of people agree that it's really not going to matter in this range, hopefully. And that's where I subscribe. I go in that group that I think we're going to pass all-time highs. And I think a lot of these institutions agree with that. They're not just doing this for a 5% haircut. And then you nailed it. I mean, 62% odds that Bitcoin hits 90K in 2026. These prediction markets, these odds have been very, very spot on recently. And we want to see this number go up. So 62% to 90K. Man, 90K would feel pretty good. I don't know. It's a good time to be in the market right now. It's better than it was a few months ago, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, the vibes have definitely shifted, and leading those vibes, you can make the case is not only price action, but at least narrative-wise, where we covered this narrative. Like, dude, the narrative's so positive. When's price action at least going to tailwind and follow a little bit? But leading the narrative is the Morgan Stanley ETF, and that's the one where you heard at the top of the show, 13 consecutive days of inflows, which I think is huge because, again, being the newest addition, you're also the latest to the party, right? And so it's like, oh, man, Morgan Stanley's launching this. Is there going to be inflows? Are there going to be people buying this? The answer is yes. It's 13 consecutive days. The other day, the latest was $11 million of inflow. And again, kind of 13 consecutive days, it doesn't really feel like as much of a trade as it is a new position, right? This is a position. Like you said, it's not something people are putting on to take a 5 or 10% haircut. They're building a position here. And again, Morgan Stanley being, you know, one of the largest wealth managers in the space, is they have a whole team now that is armed with, you know, a crypto Bitcoin position of, you know, whether it's 1, 2, 5% of saying, hey, this is a part of our future allocation. We went and all the way to build our own product for it. So I think that's been really cool to see, to just jump in line with all the other Bitcoin ETFs that are live, get consecutive days, 13 consecutive days. And just like we said with Eric's tweet, all the ETFs are taking in inflows during this time. So kind of feels like a healthy position here in this range, you know, the down end of the range in the 60s to, you know, where we are now.
All right, Crypto 101 fam, a story I don't talk about at all is back in college, I played college football at a Division I level. Back then, I could eat whatever I want, hit the gym, do the program, and stay in great shape. I didn't even have to think about it. Now that I'm older, in my 30s, it's a totally different story. And nobody loves a good dad bod more than me. But with the summer coming up, I was thinking maybe I should lean out a little bit. And my friends and I started looking into how we could achieve this. And instead of going down this peptide route or testosterone route where you got to do all these needles and stuff, we didn't want to do that. We were looking for something more similar. And so that's where we found Mars Men. Listen, you lose muscle faster and store more fat as you get older. And a big reason for that is testosterone. Most guys' levels start dropping in their early 30s, and it makes it easier to gain fat, especially around the midsection. And the more fat you gain, the more your body converts testosterone into estrogen. It just makes it a never-ending cycle. But Mars Men, it's a natural supplement designed to support healthy testosterone levels, helping your body burn fat and build lean muscle more efficiently. No weird stimulants, just ingredients like tangerine, zinc, and boron. Listen, I have friends that have taken this. They're saying they have more consistent energy. They're stronger in the gym. They have better focus, and they're leaning out a little bit as well. Less cravings, better recovery, just more dialed in overall. And listen, if you're interested in trying this, it's something that, again, you don't have to worry about needles and shots and peptides. It's just a pill. It's delivered to you, and there's a 90-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk at all. Over 91% of users report higher energy, and the reviews speak for themselves. For a limited time, our listeners get 50% off for life, free shipping, and three free gifts at mengotomars.com. That's mengotomars.com for 50% off, three free gifts when you check out. And it's also available on Amazon. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them Crypto 101 sent you. Again, for a limited time, our listeners get 50% off and free shipping for life, plus three free gifts. Go to mengotomars.com. That's mengotomars.com for 50% off and three free gifts when you check out. Also, check them out on Amazon, and wherever you purchase it, tell them Crypto 101 sent you.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about it for a while now, and things are starting to, you know, kind of come together and make a little bit more sense for the crypto market. And Morgan Stanley's Bitcoin product is obviously very new, but it's attracted a lot of meaningful new capital that's really kept the momentum going. And they're not the only players, like you said. There's a lot of other ETFs that are very positive. I think I wrote down $335 million in Bitcoin ETF inflows yesterday and $96 million in Ethereum. So we're seeing positive ETF inflows by all the major players every single day right now. So it's a very telling sign that we're moving in the right direction. And, you know, I think this is the side we want to be on right now. I think we go higher. Not to say go print your longs or anything along by those means, but it feels like we're in good shape right now.
Yeah, I have. I'm starting to build my thesis for the rest of the year. And obviously everything changes with new information. Maybe we can do a, you know, halfway through the year type of show where we kind of, you know, throw a prediction out where we might be at the end of the year. But taking some notes and enjoying the trading recently for sure. And just wanted to say hello to everybody in the chat. We didn't promote it today, but still got a couple really active people. We've got YOLO Slippins here. Trinity's here. Chun May is here. Where's everybody from? Let us know in the chat. Anybody else here, let us know where you're from. And give it a thumbs up if you can. Bottom right, subscribe. We really appreciate everybody tuning in. I didn't have this on the sheet, Brian, but I think something that people are starting to position for is the Clarity Act, right? We're leaning towards the Clarity Act getting passed. There was something that came across right before we went live. It looks like the American Bankers Association has requested 60 days to comment on rules tied to the Genius Act stablecoin bill, delaying implementation. I think the Genius Act was the first one that looked like it was going to be put into use. So even that's getting delayed a little bit more. And maybe, maybe that's, you know, I'm not in these rooms, but maybe that's tied to like, hey, we want the Genius Act and the Clarity Act. Basically, we want all the rules of the road lined up before they start implementing. So maybe that's a little bit of a sign. I don't think it's necessarily negative, but trying to push it out to be like, hey, these banks don't want to act on anything until they know the full rules of the road. Just a thought.
Yeah, I saw a headline recently. I need to do a little bit more due diligence. I think there's over 100 crypto firms right now that are pushing for this clarity. I mean, for good reason, but pushing for this Clarity Act to get marked up and get across the finish line. So it seems like a lot of people in this industry understand that there's a tight time frame and how much this matters. And yeah, I don't think this is, I don't know if this is negative or positive news. I think you put a very nice positive spin on it because it makes a lot of sense what you just said. So we just need to keep going down this path and get this across the finish line. And obviously the midterms kind of put a deadline on these things.
Right.
So let's get this done soon. Let's get this done soon while we're living, while we're eating, while meme coins and altcoins and certain products are, you know, let's pump the market. You know, it's been down for too many months right now since October. We need something new to talk about, how we're all buying Lambos and getting yachts. So the Clarity Act's the first step.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do a live call here. Let's pull up the Polymarket Clarity Act odds. Actually, an interesting week, down 23% on the week, bringing it to 43% chance. I would dip some toes in there. We'll come back to that. I'll see if I can get some action on that. Maybe because we don't have a sponsor here on the show. We're always open to one for prediction markets. I might have to check out the different odds across all the platforms, but I might take a position here in the 40s. I don't know if you'd like to join me, but at a coin flip, I'd take a coin flip. I think this is something that's going to get momentum. What's the 1 month? 1 month about the same. Down 23% in the last week. Very interesting. What has caused that? I haven't seen any headlines around that of why that might come down. Any take there?
Yeah, I think the lack of headlines is probably the reason. Ooh. We're getting a little bit more no's, because everybody knows that it says the end of 2026, but it's a much shorter window than that. We need this done sooner rather than later to really get it done in 2026. So I think any lack of news is going to depress these odds. So it feels like a coin flip to me. I'm as the permable of Crypto One, or as the duo permable of Crypto 101, the duo here. We're going to be bullish that this gets done. I'm going to stay optimistic because I think it's in everyone's best interest. But probably the lack of headlines, the lack of news is causing the public to maybe smash a little bit of the no button. I'm not going to go on that side. I'm either not going to take action or I'm going yes. So I'll probably go yes with you. And we'll see. It's going to be a big... It's going to be big. I mean, we thought this was going to be done early in the year. Did it just drop to 37%?
Yesterday. Oh, no, that was you. It snuck down there the other day, yeah.
I thought it just live went 37%. I was like about to find something on Twitter. But yeah, I just think the lack of news there. I haven't seen a ton of headlines out there that have been bearish or bullish, but that could change any minute. So yeah. we'll see what happens, man. It's just a tight timeline. Everybody knows that these midterms is going to shut things down. So it's just a tight timeline.
Yeah, that might have to go into our mid-year thesis of how the year ends as well. But while we have you here, and let's a couple more points on some Bitcoin news we saw this week. We wanted to get the take from our resident quantum expert, which is Brian McNutt, on some new quantum Bitcoin news.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I enjoy being the quantum expert, and truth be told, I've gone down the quantum computing rabbit hole pretty deep, but this is the BIP 361 that was proposed to plan to freeze these quantum vulnerable Bitcoin. So at first glance, the idea of freezing coins sounds pretty scary, but a bullish interpretation is that Bitcoin developers are finally taking a long-term network defense seriously. Reporting on this BIP 361 proposal would push holders of older quantum vulnerable coins to migrate to safer addresses over time, and while non-migrated coins are potentially just stay frozen, like Satoshi's coins. If nobody moves them, they're just frozen, so no one could hack it and then start utilizing or stealing his coins. So that tells me that Bitcoin's maturing, because serious systems eventually have to think about all the risks if it becomes an emergency. Again, quantum computing is not a threat right now, but in a couple years, a few years, it's going to become more of a threat. So Bitcoin developers, Bitcoiners are starting to push more proposals to how we can, you know, take care of this. The biggest issue is there's no CEO of Bitcoin that's just going to say, hey, we're freezing all the quantum vulnerable coins and everything else until you migrate. So there's a lot of pushback out there too. OG Bitcoiners, people, I mean, the reason we got into crypto is decentralization, not your coin, not your keys, not your coins, you know, and to be able to freeze coins is scary on as a headline, but there is a solution here. And I think these solutions are going to become more sophisticated. And as quantum computing becomes an even more threat, we're going to get a path here. But as of right now, this BIP 361 is been suggested, and there's been pushback, and there's been people that have embraced it. So we'll see which way it pivots.
We will, and you'll cover it here on the Crypto 101 Pod as more news comes. The most interesting headline I saw from Bitcoin this week was over. It was in a congressional panel where somebody in the military, the head of Indo-Pacific Command, told a congressional panel this week that the military is running a live Bitcoin node for cybersecurity testing and views the protocol as a tool of national power in competition with China. Really, I thought this was really cool. It was all over the timeline, maybe a little bit under the radar when it comes to maybe the normal crypto bro. But I got a clip for us. It's about a minute 20. I'm just teeing it up to make sure I start at the right time so we don't waste our time here. I got it here. Let's take a listen, and then we can talk about it on the back end.
Sure. Our interest in Bitcoin is as a tool of cryptography, a blockchain, and a reusable proof of work as an additional tool to secure networks and to project power. And so I think this protocol is here to stay. I think the computer science of it has direct implications for the projection of power, not financial, but from a computer science standpoint, from the securing of networks. And so I am supportive of those applications. All instruments of national power are important, but from the military application standpoint, my interest in Bitcoin is as a computer science tool as projection of power.
I appreciate that. I agree with you. And I'd also like to hear your thoughts on monetary competition over the coming decades. What role does Bitcoin play in spreading digital property rights?
Well, I people use Bitcoin today, right now, to protect their own intellectual property. And that's the reusable proof of work protocol that's combined with blockchain for accountability and cryptography for security. And so that's the role that I see for it. I see direct national security implications, and then I'm supportive for anything that maintains our own dollar dominance worldwide.
I appreciate it.
Tying in Bitcoin with power and dollar dominance, I love it. I mean, it's just that guy's got me all bulled up. And you say like, oh, but TiVo, Brian, wait, he said not financial, just power. And I say, okay, yeah, well, go look at all the companies selling power to all these AI companies, selling the GPUs. Their stocks are up 1,000% in the last 6 months. So power in the future to run, whether it's security, finances, nodes, AI, power is money. Like power, like having the ability to have power is the like almost going to be the finance, the currency of the future. And that can kind of be tied into what I think this guy is saying with how he, you know, thinks, you know, that maybe we should be more leaders in the space when it comes to the U.S. government and kind of working and controlling parts of the Bitcoin network.
Yeah, this is one of the more fascinating developments because the U.S. military is running a Bitcoin node and they're using it for operational testing and they're not mining Bitcoin. And the reason that matters is running a node lets you independently verify a network, study resilience, better understand how censorship, monetary, and communications rail behave under real-world conditions. So the government's not taking over Bitcoin. They're taking it very, very seriously. They see Bitcoin's architecture as important enough to study directly, especially in the context of a strategic competition with China. So this was not on my bingo card. That the U.S. military was running Bitcoin node, but kind of the more you think about it, the more it makes sense. And it's another notch in the belt why we should not be fading Bitcoin or the Bitcoin network.
Yeah, stuff like this gets me, or I don't know about more bullish, but like long term, just like, okay, like, yeah, this probably isn't going away. And it was interesting to hear that panel. And again, the momentum for crypto, like we talked about, where this administration had so much momentum in the beginning on the campaign trail, obviously. And then the beginning when the White House, signing in the reserve and all the, you know, the executive orders. So I just, it kind of made, it's why I lean towards the Clarity Act getting passed. I just think that it's such a base of, you know, let's be honest, of the last, you know, couple months here hasn't been maybe the most momentous for the current administration when it comes to support all around. And you could go get some stuff done, you know, when you got admirals and generals talking, you know, Admiral here, Samuel Paparo, talking about, you know, how Bitcoin he thinks is important part of the military's future is very, very interesting. I'm going to send that to my military buddy too and get his take. But any other final thoughts on that? I thought that as much as it was on the timeline, I feel like that's going to go under the radar for the average Bitcoin crypto fan.
Yeah, you're exactly right, because it's just not something that everyone's like really in tune to, because it's not, there's no financial backing behind it. It's not like they're mining Bitcoin to stack Bitcoin. They're truthfully interested in the network and how it can be resilient. And then whenever they talk about how it's a strategic competition with China, that kind of goes back and forth with, you know, the AI race and the crypto race with other countries, just kind of further endorses that theory that we need to be on the right side of this as a country, as a military, as retail holders. So it's definitely not bearish.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And that'll end our Bitcoin conversation for the day. But we doesn't mean we can't touch on Ethereum. Tom Lee's back in the news. He was obviously friend of the show, Tom Lee. He was, you know, every week was getting headlines for his high price targets as Ethereum continued to fall. But what you always got to appreciate is, you know, somebody that puts themselves out there in these headlines, but also just continues to buy as Bitmine is on their way to the alchemy of 5% of owning 5% of the Ethereum network. But Tom Lee says 250K. There was also, I'm trying to find it. I'll hand it off to you for your commentary, Brian. And I'm going to try and find, there was an article, like an X article that was going viral. I don't know if you saw that. It was same kind of price target, 250K.
How rich? Well, you know, I can't wait till Ethereum hits 250K because we're all going to be feeling really, really good about things. But I will have like this sense of like, I lost some money in the bull run of the NFT days, you know, trading an Ethereum here and there. And that would be tough to look back at some backlogs, but I hope it happens. But Tom Lee's endorsing this $250,000 ETH target tied to Ethereum and saying it's severely undervalued relative to its role in tokenization, stablecoin, staking, settlement infrastructure. You don't need to believe that exact number to appreciate the signal. Big investors are increasingly viewing Ethereum as a core infrastructure rather than just another altcoin. And that's the kind of narrative shift that we really want to see with Ethereum. And even in past cycles, we always look at Ethereum as like one of the top altcoins, altcoin this, altcoin that, altcoin season. But now when we talk about Ethereum, we kind of talk about Ethereum and Bitcoin as the majors, you know? And man, 250K. I mean, he makes some good points. I'll give him that. Because tokenization and stable coins and staking and the settlement infrastructure is such a big part of the Ethereum network and where we could go in the future. It's not a non-zero chance. I'm not betting against it. I think ETH goes up. So give me the 100X or 1,000X. 1,000X? What is it?
Yeah, it was a high price. I found there was a video that Tom personally retweeted. It's a three-minute clip here. I have not listened to it. This is called Live Producing for all the people listening. Let's tune in. It's about 3 minutes. I saw a chart within the first 30 seconds. Let's listen to a minute and see what we can break down here.
Basically, you look at just the monetary premium that currently exists in gold and Bitcoin. And then if ETH is better money than gold and Bitcoin, it should capture the monetary premium of those two assets. And then, so right now, gold has a market cap of roughly $30 trillion. And then Bitcoin has a market cap of $1.5 trillion. And then if you divide that by 121 million ETH, you arrive at a price target somewhere between $250,000 and $300,000. Right? So if you truly believe that ETH is better money than Bitcoin and gold, and I view those as the rough TAMs for kind of a scarce asset without counterparty risk, right? That's what gold is, that's what Bitcoin is. Then it's actually like a pretty simple calculation. So that's how you get to that. And I actually think that can end up being low because it doesn't even incorporate things like the broader money supply, right? Like I think M2 is like $22 trillion. There's a monetary premium in, like, for example, like luxury real estate that you're not buying like an apartment in New York City for the cash flows. It's just like store value, right? And it, the world kind of converged on one unified store value. It might win that monetary premium as well. So it's kind of like you take the TAM of total monetary premium and you divide it by the number of ETH.
So break that down. What are your thoughts there? I saw we had Grant jump in the live stream. Grant heard a friend of the show, Tom Lee, and he ran to his computer and threw it on. What's going on, Grant? I mean, not an awful breakdown there. Obviously, a very high price target. We haven't looked at this in a while. Let's pull this up. Assets by market cap. Gold leading the way at $32 trillion. Silver, $4 trillion. You can see there are top companies in the world as well. Bitcoin at 1.5. So again, there's all the people that say Bitcoin's going to swallow and pass gold. You know, you got a little less than 32x to get there. And then if you want to talk about Ethereum, we got to scroll down. I believe it's in the 60s, 63. Look at that. What a guy.
That's a good guess.
What can you do? $277 billion. So before we start talking, in my mind, let's bring this down to earth for the good people at Crypto 101. We got a nice stream going on. Some people are piling in here. We appreciate it. Where's everybody?
Well, they heard ETH 250.
They heard ETH 250,000. Everybody piles in. Hey, at least we don't, like, at least we keep it real on this show. But everybody did pile in at ETH $250,000. But here's my thought on, $277 billion market cap for ETH. We need ETH to get, you know, to the trillion. We want it to pass the trillion. We want it to get back up there, you know, maybe pass Walmart, maybe pass, like, if Warren Buffett is in the rearview mirror for Ethereum, I think that's, you know, there's some serious FOMO that's going to kick in there. And we can start to talk about those more lofty price targets. But for now, I think we need to be a little bit more realistic about our first stop on the way up.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting crazy valuations from companies with, like, I'm blanking right now, a SpaceX IPO, they're saying it's going to be like $3 trillion. There's some crazy, there's a lot of money in this world. And then I'm just going to say it again, tokenization, stable coins, staking, and then just overall settlement of the financial system on the Ethereum rails. It looks like a lot of institutions are moving that way. I'm kind of selling myself, feeling very underexposed to ETH right now.
I will say, the live producing on this show today has been really, I'm on my game today, Brian. I'm pulling this up. I always think of this clip because this is like for somebody who's got their bags packed for ETH, the bags packed for BitMine. This is not personal financial advice at all. We are not financial advisors. We're just friends talking crypto here. But the reason why the bags are packed is I think of this clip. Because in 10, 15 years from now, I can't look at Ethereum $250,000 and go back and watch these shows where we're playing these clips of Tom Lee saying this. Because you go back to 2019 when Tom Lee was on CNBC, everybody called him absolutely crazy. So I think let's play this for a little fun.
Now, if you actually think it's undervalued by that extent?
Well, you know, we think the best approach for most people is just to put 1% or 2%.
Are you saying that? I get that if you're somebody who's got a lot of assets, I still think it's crazy. But for a retail investor, somebody who's saving for retirement and putting that aside, that seems crazy to me.
Well, it's basically the idea that, you know, you can afford to lose 1% if that's 1% of your portfolio.
That's
but
crazy. You might as well throw it away on high fees to an investor, to an average. Like this, you're taking a flyer on that. You don't know where it's going to go or what's going to happen.
Well, in a way, that's right, Becky, that for the majority of people, it's, you know, 1% is like a small risk bet, but, you know, Bitcoin makes all of its gains in 10 days in a year. I think this is an example that, you know, if you screw the 10 best days, Bitcoin loses 25% a year. So you got to essentially hold it or hodl it, as they say. to really capture the game.
1%. That's crazy. That's crazy. 2019, it's crazy. Now Morgan Stanley can say maybe 5%, 7%. BlackRock wants you to put 5% in. All these firms, all these ETFs. Like, I don't want to look back at the Ethereum story with Tom Lee starting BitMine and pounding the table for the alchemy of 5%. I can't. I feel like doing this show with you weekly, I can't look back at that. It'll haunt me for the rest of my life. So the bags are packed. I'm saying it. Complete bias. But that's one of my theses. As the vibes guy of the team, that's my vibe.
It's a strong vibe, and I'm sold again. I'm so sold. I feel underexposed to $250,000 Ethereum. And I mean, it's not like we're just pulling numbers out of a hat. There is a path here. People are clearly defining how it gets there. Now, yes, there needs to be a lot of catalysts and a lot of things happen, but we've seen it kind of happen time and time again, that a lot of these are some of the best assets we can own. And yeah, just the fear of missing out on this, especially for you and me, like living and working in the crypto industry, I couldn't take it. I couldn't take it. I'm going to get off. Not financial advice, but I'm going to get off and we're going to buy some more ETH.
I love that.
Get off this stream. I'm getting a little bit.
I was actually thinking this. I was thinking of designing. I might have to add artwork, an Ethereum artwork here. Maybe a little ode to Tom Lee or something. Something funny. But yeah, that's where my...
Why don't we have Tom Lee hoodies in the... Yeah. In the like
I'm with
in
Tom.
The crypto... Oh! This is generational wealth we're fumbling with apparel, a Tom Lee hoodie.
Live meme, verbal meme idea. Ethereum, remember the book Something for Dummies, Sports for Dummies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Ethereum for Dummies in that black and yellow, and then it's just Tom Lee with like a thumbs up.
It's so good. I'd wear it everywhere, man. And if you know, you know. That's the best part about that apparel. Yeah. We might need to hit the creative brainstorm work there.
I love it. Out there. Let's keep moving on for the great people of Crypto 101. I appreciate everybody, enjoying the entertainment there, and going down a trip down memory lane with that old clip from Tom. But we want to talk about the future of the Fed. Kevin Warsh. We talked about it with Brendan on Tuesday, Brian. There was the first Senate hearing. I was trying to pull some clips from it. The most interesting thing I found was, at least crypto related, was he did mention crypto. Quick clip here. Let's take a look.
I believe that digital assets should be incorporated into our financial industry so Americans have new investment opportunities and consumer protections.
Senator, digital assets are already part of the fabric of our financial services industry in the United States. Yes.
Already a part of the fabric. Makes me feel like it's not going anywhere. Not that he has an inside scoop of, where the Clarity Act might be going, but it makes sense there. And did you see any clips from the Kevin Warsh hearing?
Yeah, I saw that clip going around a little bit. I mean, he's basically acknowledging that, you know, crypto's here to stay. Doesn't Kevin Warsh have like millions of dollars in crypto that was disclosed?
It was a ton. We pulled that shit up the other day on Tuesday. It was huge.
Yeah, it's. I mean, let's just follow the breadcrumbs that I don't think this guy is going to stomp out his own bags. And obviously, the administration's trying to push a lot of pro-crypto guardrails or rails. It's not surprising to me, but just keep saying it out loud, Kev, because you have meaningful crypto exposure. So do all of us. And he's basically he's saying exactly crypto's here. It's part of the United States financial system. That doesn't sound like a guy that wants to ban crypto. A few years ago doing this show, we were talking about how the United States government wants to ban crypto. Mm-hmm. And we were bullish on it. Now we got the Fed chair saying that crypto's part of the financial system.
The fabric of the financial system.
I mean, probably another sweatshirt T-shirt idea right there with something like Kev.
Yeah, he owned like, I think it was like 30 plus projects, millions, tens of millions of dollars in crypto. Wait, I got two things we got to bring up with you. Number one, while I go pull up his sheet and we can go over it real quick, I need you to look at this freeze frame and there's an absolute Easter egg on there. Do you see the Easter egg?
On this one right here?
Yeah, on this video. There's a huge Easter egg.
The Honorable Kevin, is it? Is that Larry Fitzgerald? Is that Larry Fitzgerald?
Larry Fitzgerald. I'm with Brendan watching. I'm like, you won't believe this. I'm like, I'm watching this clip. I'm like, is that Larry?
Is that actually?
It's Larry Fitzgerald.
Him? That's yes. Not a doppelganger.
No, it's Football Hall of Famer, Arizona Cardinal Hall of Famer, Larry Fitzgerald.
Pitt Panther, Arizona Cardinals, one of the greatest to ever play the game. Hell of a golfer, too.
Yeah. And I guess
Larry Fitzgerald.
I tried Google. I was like, I promised the listeners on Tuesday, I was like, I'm going to find out why Larry Fitzgerald was there. There's like, I don't know. There wasn't like a huge reason. He's just like, boys. I guess he spoke at John McCain's funeral. John McCain, famous politician from Arizona, former presidential candidate. So I guess, you know, being from Arizona, he went the Republican or is a Republican, at least supporting. And I don't know the Kevin Warsh connection. I really couldn't find it. But I mean, what placement? Just right behind him. That was great. A little fun Easter egg for you. I wanted to pull this up for you. Here's all of his holdings. And there was one on Tuesday. We started dying laughing. And we were like, we need Brian and Joe to tell us it's like it's a NFT project called Friends with Benefits. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh yeah. Of course. Friends with Benefits. It was not serious. I think he has Blast on here too. I don't know if everyone remembers the Blast. Like, yeah, oh my gosh, it's like number 5 on there. These Blast, it's an Ethereum L2. It's kind of gone to zero. He's Dapper Labs. That's the I mean, I love Dapper Labs, but he's got some crazy. This looks like some holdings from my stuff back in the day.
He's a DJ, dude. I love it.
Polymarket. He's got some prediction market stuff there. He's got some. He's got friends with benefits. I mean, he's. I would imagine him or his accountant or somebody's compiling all his crypto holdings. So. Amazing list here. This isn't just your standard Bitcoin, Ethereum, and sprinkle a little Solana. Maybe have a couple top alts. My guy has Match Day and Dapper Lab and Friends with Benefit NFTs and Blast L2s. So I'm siding with our Fed chair that's holding this portfolio right now. Yeah, he can pretty much do whatever he says.
The honorable Kevin Warsh, friends with Larry Fitzgerald, absolute degen, kind of seems like a guy you might want to have a beer with and hang out. Not necessarily crypto specific related, but I did find this was, he was kind of making the rounds, this was the best clip I saw of him. So I just thought it would be cool to listen to as he's in top of the news here of kind of his vision of, you know, being Fed chair.
What we call AI in a couple of years, we'll just call business. And AI is going to make almost everything cost less. And the U.S. can be a big winner. And it's a hugely exciting moment. If I were to step back for a minute, if I were the president, what I'd be worried about is a central bank that doesn't see any of that. A central bank that is stuck with models from 1978, governance from a prior period, and don't recognize we could be at the front end of a productivity boom. And if I were the president, I'd be worried that they might not see it. And they might think economic growth is somehow going to be inflationary. I think we were probably in the early innings of a structural decline in prices. Ken sees it on the front lines of real businesses. And I think if you look over the period of the next year or two, it's a pretty special moment.
I thought that was a really cool clip because, you know, you have your opinions and political, especially when it gets political. But I just thought it was cool of the soundbite of, hey, we got to kind of change how we look at all this stuff. Me and you have done the Fed shows, and when we're talking about inflation, they're using inflation indicators from the 70s and 80s, and it just feels like it's not modernized. And some of these stats that the Fed uses to argue points, just they aren't relevant or as relevant, or they just need some tweaking. So it was interesting to hear that as the incoming Fed chair.
Yeah. No takes right here other than I agree.
Yeah. So it would be something we'll keep track. I think the Senate, he'll definitely pass the Senate because I know they have, you know, Republican majority, but he'll get held up in the House, and whatever it takes to get him passed, we will continue to cover that. We got a couple quick hitters to end the show here. The Justin Sun saga continues to heat up as the Tron founder Justin Sun files a lawsuit against World Liberty Financial, official lawsuit
against the family who runs the White House, who pardoned him as well, right? So it's really interesting.
Yeah, you know, he caught that pardon, but this is an interesting headline. Justin Sun is suing World Liberty Financial right now, and it's getting a little messy out there. I think Sun agreed to pay like a $10 million like settlement for his pardon, but he invested a lot into World Liberty Fi, and then World Liberty Fi froze his tokens. And then they froze his tokens, and he's saying he's being unfairly treated compared to other early investors. Justin Sun is certainly an interesting individual for crypto. The project World Liberty Fi is a very interesting project. There's a lot of what am I trying to say here? There's a lot of interesting personalities behind all of these projects, Tron and Justin Sun and World Liberty Fi. Do I think there's something like kind of like going on behind the scenes? Probably.
It's a what have you done for me lately situation. Eric Trump tweets out the only thing more ridiculous than Tron founder Justin Sun's lawsuit is spending $6 million on the banana duct tape to a wall. Then there's a picture of Eric Trump. He wanted to get a picture with the banana. So it's like, it's clearly a, what have you done for me lately? I think, you know, even a blind guy could see that there's, you know, scratching backs left and right going on over there. We'll cover it because it's crypto related, but you know, I don't really see it as a fundamental driver either way for the long-term future of crypto.
Yeah, agreed. It's, you know, World Liberty Fi, Justin Sun. We're going to get interesting headlines coming out of all of those.
Yeah.
Anything with those names in it.
But more, something that will affect the future of crypto is just more perps trading. More perps. Polymarket's launching perps. Kalshi's launching perps. Which one are you using, Brian? Are you excited for it? Are there too many perps out there? I feel like I'm over perped.
Yeah, I mean, Hyperliquid has been just printing a bag, and Polymarket's moving into this 24/7 perpetual market, which suggests it wants to evolve from a prediction market into a broader trading infrastructure, offering always on leverage exposure to crypto equities and commodities. I think the bullish thesis is that crypto native market structure keeps spreading, and platforms that already own attention and liquidity communities want to capture more flow. We know the valuations for Polymarket are outrageously high, and you can make a lot of money with perps. I'm not a huge perps trader, but I will probably utilize it on Polymarket. I use it on Hyperliquid. And Hyperliquid took a little bit of a dip over the past week or so, and I think we're seeing that dip. They're still making a massive amount of money in the revenue buybacks. I still love that project. But I think this news is just creating more competition for the perps market.
Yeah, competition's good. Good for consumers usually. So we'll keep track of that. I wanted to give a shout out. There's always a comment that bugs me for the Crypto 101 podcast network. And if you could, give us a thumbs up on the YouTube. Subscribe if you're new. If you're an audio listener, if you could do me a favor, go on Spotify, go on Apple. Give us a rating, 5 stars, please. Leave a comment if you can. Let us know what you like about the show. But there's one comment that always gets me, and it's like they're blindsided. They don't talk about XRP. It's the funniest one. It's like they gave us 1 star, and they said we're blindsided. They don't talk about XRP. We talk about XRP when it needs to be talked about. I saw this news, SoFi adding XRP deposits alongside Bitcoin, ETH, and Sol. It's one of the first nationally chartered U.S. banks to offer XRP, an FDIC-insured account for SoFi. So I wanted to give a shout-out to XRP. I wanted to give a shout-out to the XRP Army, forever friends of the show at Crypto 101. Some XRP news, Brian.
Yeah, we need to talk up the XRP Army a little bit more. I get it. I'm not a huge XRP fan, and we've of course got that backlash. But SoFi is not a random offshore exchange. It's a major U.S. financial platform. So adding XRP deposits alongside Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana is a pretty big deal. So congrats to the XRP Army. Chirp us in the comments. That's okay. I want XRP to absolutely continue to rip, because if XRP is going up, it probably means the majority of other cryptocurrencies are going up. So I'm all about it, man. I want more liquidity in the market. Let's do it.
There we go. Yeah, and SoFi's a cool company to keep track of as well. Kind of,
yeah.
You know, a little bit more, I don't know how to say under the radar, obviously. I mean, SoFi Stadium, but just not, I feel like not on the crypto timeline as much as like a Robinhood, but doing a lot of cool stuff, especially with this announcement as well. And I'm sure they'll be rolling out more. Let's go to, did you see the DoorDash news? Let's wrap up with the DoorDash news here.
I saw it on the sheet, but I don't know what it is. I didn't look at it.
Yeah, so we caught it earlier in the week. We talked about it with Brendan. I was just wanting to find more information on it for the listeners. It's because they partnered, DoorDash is partnering with Tempo, Stripe, and other companies launching to bring kind of stable coins to the DoorDash system. Or app, if you will. And so I found this video. It's 90 seconds long. I just thought it's kind of explaining how stable coins are, you know, it's like a broader view on stable coins. And then obviously it's promoting, you know, what they're doing here. So let's take a listen.
Everyone, whether they like it or not, has to care about money. But very few people stop to think about what is the technology that's underpinning money. I think traditional payment rails are good, and they're fine, but they come with drawbacks. They're slower sometimes, they're more expensive sometimes, and I think that's where stablecoins and stablecoin exploration comes in.
Stablecoins provides an avenue for people to get paid out faster, but also more affordably. That's been a big motivator in terms of why we're excited to be a design partner with Tempo.
Tempo's enthusiasm in working with partners has been felt from day one.
Klarna's fascination and just like complete drive to build for an end consumer is matched by Tempo and all its partners.
The exciting thing to me about Tempo is we believe there's an opportunity for next generation chains that are built and designed specifically for payments that can scale to many more individuals and financial institutions that have never touched blockchain before.
Tempo has a world-class team in the crypto space. I think they have a ton of experience, not only with crypto from a technology standpoint, but also from an enterprise readiness standpoint.
They're really lowering the barrier to entry for entrepreneurs to build brand new products all over the world.
The future is building on-chain. There are so many new ways to build new businesses on top of crypto.
So we'll pause it there. I mean, you saw it's Visa, it's DoorDash, it's Shopify. These are the, you know, these are huge companies. Visa, obviously, being an old guard of the payment system. Shopify, a new guard of commerce. DoorDash, I think you can make the case that DoorDash is the leader, at least U.S.-wide, for delivery, food delivery. So, you know, the last quote there that I stopped on was, there's many ways to build a business on top of crypto. So, again, these payment rails, stable coins, looking for the legislation these companies are building. We need the rules of the road, and it feels like it's something that, you know, is going to unlock a lot of liquidity. And it would be great if these stable coin rewards are passed down to users, and it could really be really beneficial for companies and people. It's kind of the marching orders of this stable coin revolution that I feel like it's been really been, you know, leading crypto as a narrative recently. So I thought that was just cool to get all those companies kind of working together. And I haven't heard of Tempo before personally, so I was just trying to get some more information on it.
Yeah, I mean, crypto's inching closer to normal consumer awareness. So with this partnership with DoorDash, it's excellent. Are you a DoorDash guy? Do you use DoorDash a lot?
No, I'm not. I'm an Uber Eats guy. I'm an Uber guy. I'm an Uber shareholder. Have been for a long time. I remember.
Hey,
it was
you guys support your. You guys support right. Your bags.
You got to support your bags. I remember it was before I even. I guess, yeah, it was before I even worked here, really. It was 2020, or no, it was during the pandemic. I was like scooping up Uber in like, you know, the teens and the 20s. And I think it, you know, got up to like 100. I just never sell. No, I'm just kidding. We'll take some profit eventually. But I'm an Uber guy. I'm a big Uber guy. So got to support my bags.
I'm taking profit at 200.
I don't know if I've ever used DoorDash.
I got a family of six. I don't do anything like that. I would years ago. I would probably get delivery, but you know, I mean, a DoorDash, man. I'm ordering food out. Like that's hundreds of dollars, man. I'm trying to stack Ethereum before it goes to a quarter of a milli. Then we figure out the DoorDash situation. You know, then we start eating like kings. But right now, We're rice and potatoes. Just fill your tummy up because daddy's spending it on crypto. You know, you said selling. I'll just full disclosure here. Ethereum. I'm stuck on this Ethereum $250,000 comment from Tom Lee. I don't know why it's hitting me so hard, but I'm probably selling at 249. I'm gonna sell 249. What a shade on
it. Get out early. That's awesome. Well, great show today. Thanks, Brian. He'll be back, I think, early next week. Again, if you're ever interested in more info, check the description. Get a dollar trial to Momentum Moneymakers. We'll have some Momentum Moneymakers updates next week on Tuesday. Also, next Friday, we're going to be doing a live stream with Brendan. I believe the cohort might open up for the trading course. Always a good time when we see momentum in the markets to understand the technicals. So that's going to be opening back up. One final call. Again, if you guys could, just give us a review. You know, give the rating a podcast, Spotify, Apple. If you're listening on YouTube, give it a thumbs up. Really helps. Subscribe, bottom left. We always really appreciate everybody who tunes in. I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. This is our episode heading into the weekend. So enjoy your weekend. We will see you back here next week to break down everything that's going on. We always appreciate you listening. That's all for now. Bye, everybody.